This show is sponsored by NatureBox. NatureBox ships great-tasting, healthy snacks right to your door. Forget the vending machine and start snacking smarter with healthy and delicious treats like dark cocoa almonds. Support this podcast by ordering a free NatureBox sampler box at naturebox.com/Joey. That's right. Free NatureBox snacks are found at naturebox.com/Joey. The show is also brought to you by MeUndies.com. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey and check out the men's and women's underwear. They have t-shirts, socks, shorts, the most comfortable clothing you're going to wear. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey and you're going to get 20% off of your first order and get free shipping in the United States and Canada. Also, go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off of all their optimization products. Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport. It's code word CHURCH to get 10% off. And go to IronDragonTV.com. Iron Dragon TV is a Roku channel with all of your favorite martial arts movies. They have Onnit Lab videos. They're the leader in 4K technology. And when you go to IronDragonTV.com, use code word Joey to get 2 free rentals.
What the fuck are you doing with your life, motherfucker? It's lunchtime here in Los Angeles, a cloudy day. We might as well get together and do a church episode for you. Billy Corbin's calling in. Talk a little bit about dog fighting, so fuck it. Little mean streets for you cocksuckers. Oh shit. Tell you what, man. Eddie Van Halen was on fire on this fucking album. Oh shit. Lee Syatt in the house. Jews are around. The Star of David is above us. And it's a beautiful day to be alive, motherfuckers. What's the story, dog?
There's no story. How are you doing? I'm doing great.
I'm feeling better. You know, when Mean Streets came out, I wasn't a big Van Halen fan. Van Halen, the first album had come out, and I went to see him blow Sabbath out of the fucking stage. And then Van Halen 2 came out, and it was a Menzo Motta album.
Okay.
And I don't remember what happened after Van Halen 2, what album came out after that. Maybe Women and Children First. And that one I didn't think much of. And then this one came out, and I fucking said, wow. And I was just getting into senior year in high school. One of the first videos on MTV
right.
was one of the songs from this album, This Is Love, and that's a great fucking video. And that was my Van Halen story for the day, all right?
I was thinking about that the other day, though, how music nowadays, it seems like they're writing it for what they feel will sell. Like, I forget, there was a song, like, by this like, Meghan Trainor. I forget what it was about, but I was just as I was listening to it, all I could think of is someone sat down and wrote a song that they thought would be profitable or popular. And it doesn't seem like any of the music that we start the show with is like that.
No,
and it doesn't seem like, it seems like that kind of translates to everything, but especially for you, comedy. It seems like there's a lot of comedy out there who, even movies, where you watch it, you're like, someone thought about this and was like, this is going to be popular.
Concocted this.
Yeah.
It's more concocted. Well, sometimes an agent will call you and say, hey, man, you have any scripts about, ghosts, hanging out with Martians? That's going to be the popular thing next year. You know, and everybody will buy one of those scripts, try to develop it out of the six or seven networks. Four of them will put something, Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, it always happens.
The Struggle of a Vampire. Then it fizzles away. Then two of them will go away and two of them will last. And that's just, they buy hooks, whatever the fuck it is. It's like, what's a skinny girl that sings about everybody she fucks?
Oh, Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. Yeah, I don't give a fuck about that music. I have Sirius in the car. I listen to fucking Ozzy's Boneyard before I put that shit on.
Right.
So I don't even know what's really going on in the world of music today. And it's very sad. I feel weird sometimes, but every time I listen to new music, it feels like I've heard it before.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion on it. That's why I don't listen to it. I don't mind listening to Ozzy's Boneyard, and I listen to Jimmy Florentine's show and Norton's show. And, if I'm in the car, that's what I'll put up. I'll listen to hip-hop all out. Hip-hop station, those crazy
motherfuckers. You've never put that on when I've been in the car. You always talk about it, but I've never heard it.
They're the craziest black people in the fucking world. Sometimes it's really good. Sometimes it's, you're like, yeah, what the fuck is this? My wife doesn't like when I put on the car. Mercy definitely don't like it. Yeah.
She doesn't like rap?
It's not rap. They talk a lot, too. It's all access. Okay. They talk. They do an interview. They play music. They fucking curse. I listen to classic disco, Studio 54 at night sometimes.
Yeah, you listen to everything.
I listen to everything. I don't give a fuck what's... I listen to Lithium. I like Lithium a lot. Lithium is my music. That's, Alice in Chains, Nirvana. That's that generation. The Sound of Winter, those fucking people, Bush, type of shit like that. And then there's also classic rock I listen to. So
yeah, it's to me, it doesn't bother me as much. Like, you feel like you've heard it before, because at this point, it's almost, it's possible, but it's a lot harder to like not have anyone influence you. But it's just like, even when I'm listening to like morning radio, and it's just hearing the songs that they play, and then hearing the stuff that they have to talk about, it's just, I can get into new stuff, but it just has to feel like someone actually wrote it it's just weird.
It's I don't like when everything sounds like Green Day sometimes to me. I hate that shit. I like Green Day. Leave Green Day the fuck alone. everything sounds like da 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 da.
Yeah.
Everything has like this. I don't fucking dig it, so I don't judge it. It's not that I'm judging it. It's not for me. Maybe if I buy the whole album, I might fucking like it, Let me talk to you guys about yesterday. Yesterday was one of the weirdest podcasts we ever had in our life. First of all, let me tell you what's going on in life, and it happens sometimes. It's the law of diminishing returns. I schedule myself really well, guys, because I know that I get tired. I got a lot on my plate. I don't have a lot on my plate like a TV show or shit like that. I just have a lot of movement on my plate, especially since we don't have no family to help us with the fucking baby. I have to help around the house. I have to be there certain times. I'm trying to write a book, which I'm banging my head off of. I'm trying to write material. We're trying to tape a special here in August. My agency, they moved, so I had to go with a different agent, to a better agent, which I'm not mad about, but it just was a lot of stress, because if I told somebody no, I would get them mad. So whoever I said no to, whether I stayed or went, somebody was going to be angry, There was just a lot of little things going on, I had to cancel a podcast Tuesday morning that we had to cancel three times already, me and the guy, because I had two auditions. And I spoke to him at 4 and said, "We're on for tomorrow, brother. This is going to be fucking great, 10 a.m. Not 15 fucking minutes later. And I've had 2 days like that this week where the whole slate has changed, because of an audition or a meeting. This new agency, they're aggressive to get me on board. So now they're making little things happen, So it's just, yesterday we got together, it was just one of those dud days that we couldn't get the energy up in the room. I mean, Martin Wheeler's a very interesting guy, but it just felt that, sometimes I see people drinking, and when they put the bottle down, they'll put it down like a half a fag, and I would go, "Why is he drinking like that?" That's why, because they're decent people. Not that they're half a fags, they're decent. They drink the right way, not like a fucking gorilla like me. I like push the water, and it goes into your fucking throat, whatever. So, what's going on, Lee? I see you all panicking and shit.
No, nothing.
Like Captain Kirk.
Your stream almost died, but it's bad.
Man, stop taking your finger off the board. You're going to fuck things up. Every time you leave your finger on the board, all fucked up. So, it was just one of those dud fucking podcasts. I love Mr. Wheeler. We're just going to redo it again today. Not with Mr. Wheeler. We're going to get him in here another time in a different type of podcast situation. And that's why. We just didn't want to leave you with that one. I didn't want somebody referring somebody to us, and then the guy listens to the podcast, and that's that one. He'll call you back and go, "What the fuck was that?" Even though you have good and bad podcasts, we just figured. Billy Corbin wanted to come in this week, so we're going to have him call in and talk a little bit about Dogfight, which I saw and seemed very interesting. But let's see what the fuck my man Billy Corbin has to say. But I basically left here yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I went home. I wrote a little bit. And I tell you, I could have gone to bed at 6. And I held it out. Like, we had dinner at the house, and I played with the baby. And we held out. And I think I put the sleep apnea mask on at 8:48. 8:48, I couldn't take it no more.
Jesus.
And I slept straight till 1, I think. I opened my eyes at 1, closed them again, got up at 3 at the dot, got up, made a cup of coffee. I was thinking of going to 5 a.m. jiu-jitsu.
The 5 a.m. jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, I took a fucking aspirin and everything for my heart. I go, maybe I go to 5 a.m. jiu-jitsu.
Where do they do that?
VMAC.
No way.
Yes, they do. 5 a.m.
Who teaches it?
Kyle. He gets off of work. He's like a graphic designer. So he works nights. So he said, fuck it, I'm sick and tired of not training. I'll just put together a 5 in the morning class. And guess what? He gets 5 people, 6 people in there every morning. Some people have that energy early in the morning and they want to get the fuck out of the house. And some people have that. They got to be at work by 7. They got showers over there.
And there's a lot of people over here who work nights. I used to work nights for 2 years. I could see that. That's pretty. But it's with yesterday, it's kind of weird how, like, when you left and we were kind of like on the fence about doing it again. A lot from the first job that I had, you kind of learn, people teach you just how to get, how just enough is good enough or whatever. Like, when I used to work at the movie theater, we used to sweep the popcorn under the row in front. So, like, you, the night cleaners would get it. And it's just, I was thinking about it in here, because I was trying to put it up, I was like, yeah, I think he's right. Like, it's just, you have to have some sort of standard for yourself. And it's, I think a lot of people deal with that at work. They learn shortcuts and people teach them. The people training them have shortcuts.
The worst part of society today is customer service. Customer service in this country has gone down 50%. Are we getting dumber? Are we not getting paid enough? Or do we not have integrity in our jobs and who the fuck we are?
All of it.
Okay? It's a little bit of everything. Because sometimes you go, what the fuck? I'm getting 12. My cousin's getting 18. I'm not going to work hard. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. But that's when your personal comes in. And once your personal comes in, you say to yourself, what do I expect from myself? You know, that was it. Even when I sold Coke, I sold the best Coke I could get my hands on. When I bring the edibles I bring in here, I bring the best edibles that I feel are out there. You know those little fucking things we eat? They're $20 a piece. They get you high. But it's 20 fucking bucks.
The stars?
No, the fucking things.
Oh.
The taffy.
Oh, wow.
A great edible. But I would never push them because they're $20 for that little fucking edible.
Right.
Okay? Stars are 3 stars for $10.
Oh, wow.
I don't get mad at you for that. That's 3 people getting high. But who the fuck are you? It's a great edible, but it doesn't work for us all the way around. I would never stand behind it because I want the people who listen to the church to get the best fucking value for their dollar. I don't want them coming to me going, Joey, it's a great cookie. But it's $35. Who the fuck are you kidding? Yeah, anybody could do that.
Right, yeah.
Anybody could do that. It's like when you see, a pregnant woman at the celebrities, and you see him 8 weeks later, and people are like, look at the diet she went on. And then you see women at home going, why can't that happen to me? Well, because she had $200 an hour training. Somebody came in and rubbed her with fucking cow udder cream to take the fucking stretch marks off and put her in baking soda. And, you know, it's amazing what money does.
Right.
I don't come from that cut. That's why I drive a fucking Subaru. I want the best for my dollar. I'm an American. I want the best for my fucking dollar. Yeah, I could drive a BMW and fucking lease it and drive around and make believe I'm a fucking producer and do 35 in the left-hand lane, act like a fucking Momo like half these people in this town. I don't want to do that. I drive what works for me. It's $229 a month, whether I have a job or not. I could steal $229 fucking dollars. You understand me? I could get $1 a month and still make my car payment. So that's what my thought process is. When it comes to the work, you know, when I'm fucking around at the Comedy Store and I have an idea and I want to go down there, it may bomb. Hey, it may bomb. You know, this is what this is on a Tuesday night. But when you pay $20 to come see him on a Friday and Saturday, I give you the best I have because I don't want somebody else saying I saw him. Hey, you're going to have bad sets. But I want you to know in your heart I gave you the best I had. Yesterday, this is a podcast. We could put it up and not give a fuck.
Right.
You know what? I don't want to do this to these people.
Right.
I want to give them something every day to take home and go, you know what? The podcast sucked. But he made a great point with that. There was no points made yesterday. We had nowhere to go. I was flat. You were flat. He was flat. So fuck it. Let's just bounce it. And let's give these people why they listen to us.
Right.
That's how you do things in this life.
And I don't think you trying something new on stage isn't giving your best. Because I think some comics might do is going on stage and doing the same thing. And that's just, they know it's going to be okay and there'll be an okay set. But if you try something new, you're trying to make yourself better.
You know, ever since I started the podcast with you, or with Felicia, and we were doing this, you know what, man? It created something different in me. There was times I went up on stage, and I can tell you, I didn't give a fuck. They weren't there to see me. They were there to see Rogan. I could see how that attitude comes out. I could see it in many ways, how things like that happen. But there's another flip side to that. I want them to like me. I want to be likable with them and have a relationship so, you know, I could, they'll come and see me again and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blue, and everybody's fucking happy. So, I just want to do the podcast over just to give them something. I just thought that wasn't us yesterday, and it was, it happened. Even I proved it to myself when I went home and fucking fell asleep for, 12 hours. Because I got up at 3. I got some coffee. I watched an episode of The Sopranos.
That's hysterical.
I watched a little bit of Sons of Anarchy. And I watched a little bit of news. And I wrote. And it's funny, people always tell you, I love writing when I get up. I love writing my book. Like, I even wrote some bullshit, like I tell people to do, like the Warrior's Way, whatever idea they had. But the interesting thing I did is I got a fucking... When you're sitting there at 4 in the morning and there's no noise, and I even went outside and hit the bowl.
Jeez.
Oh, my God, I got this Hollywood OG. Holy, this thing will fuck you up. When I leave here, I was running late, so I didn't really want to go over there and stop. And, you know, when I leave here, I got like 520s in my pocket. I'm going over there. I'm getting it, the whole fucking $100 to them. That's how good that weed is.
Wow.
I got fucked up this morning, fucked up a couple minutes ago. But when I smoked it yesterday, I was high for at least, I don't know how long, and I couldn't stop fucking eating nacho chips either. Those little dried chips the baby has.
Oh, okay.
I must have ate fucking 20 of those things.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been getting better at that, though, for me.
When you leave out of here?
Oh, yeah, not going crazy.
But it was really crazy last night. Like, I was, Gordon Warnock is helping me with the book. He's an agent, really good guy. You know,
okay.
Me and him have been going back and forth. He's been telling me to give him a chapter. You know, give him a chapter about my first day in North Bergen, which, not my first day living there, but my first day when I met Carmine and Anthony and all that.
Right.
But he also wanted me to give him an intro, you know. And I couldn't figure out what the intro was. I couldn't figure out if it was my wife telling me that she was pregnant and how I reacted to it, you know, that day. Like, it just, it messed with me for a couple hours. And then her and I got into it one day at the habit over the pregnancy. Like, I was like, I don't know what to do. You know, I'm fucking 40, I'm going to be 50. And I've been thinking about what to write for the intro. You know, the whole time I was like, well, I'll write this and I'll write that. Maybe I'll write one. I was in the jail cell and what I was thinking about. And then something dawned on me. I was looking at, we got a school picture from Mercy. Have you seen it?
No.
A school picture. She looks like a fucking bruiser. She didn't like the photographer, so she was crying. When she don't like the photographer, she gets pissed off. If she don't like who's taking the picture, she'll fucking. So I don't know what happened. I didn't go. I was out of town. My wife told me she didn't like the lady. The lady was like 800 pounds, and she was scaring Mercy, and Mercy was fucking yelling at her and shit. You know, she finally took the picture. But if you see the picture, she looks like a fucking bruiser. She looks like, you know, she's pissed and she's big. And
she's scowling at her?
Yeah, she's scowling and she's big and the whole thing. And I'm looking at her and I'm thinking to myself, you know, the last thing I would want right now in this world is to leave this little girl, like, to die. Like, I couldn't even imagine. Like, I just could not imagine, you know. And for this is last night when I'm sitting there writing what I tell you motherfuckers that has worked for me in the morning, just to get up in the morning and go, it's Thursday, June 11th. It's a beautiful day. I always started with, it's a beautiful day to be alive. Today I have this, 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 and this on the table. And all of a sudden, your mind just goes. Your mind just opens up. It's amazing. Your mind just dumps this. And in the middle of all this writing, I came up with this thing. When I left here yesterday, I had a message on my phone from my friends in Miami, the people I knew on 148th Street.
Okay.
And she wanted to call me and ask me about a date, if I was going to be in Florida on that date. And I said no. And we got back and forth to talking about something. And she said, I remember a story one time when you went to Riverside Drive and you went to play baseball. And she goes, do you remember? I didn't fucking remember at all. She goes, you put the cup outside your pants. You wouldn't put the cup under your underwear. You didn't like it touching your dick. So you put the baseball cup. And she goes, 1,000 kids called you a retard, and you didn't give a fuck. To you, that was what you were doing. You were putting the drop cup outside.
How old were you?
I go, how old was I? She goes, you had to be maybe five.
That's hysterical.
Five and a half with jeans on. She goes, you put the cup out. You had your little baseball shirt with your helmet and with your hat and your glove and shit, you know?
And you just didn't like the idea of putting it in the pants?
Nah. And something happened that she goes, I went down there with your mom and the guy I was seeing at the time, Felipe, who she ended up marrying. She told me, she goes, do you remember? And I go, no, I don't. And she goes, you said something really weird that I never forgot. When the game ended, you guys had to shake hands. It was like a little league game or something, like a some peewee type T-ball or some shit. You had to shake hands.
Right, yeah.
And she goes, when you were shaking hands, you just turned your back and you walked away. And I went up to you. Your mom was like 10 feet ahead of you and you were running up to your mom. And she goes, I went up to you and you looked at me and something about, don't you want to stay or something? And you said, what do I want to stay for? I got no father to watch me play this fucking game anyway. She goes, do you remember that? And I go, not at all. She goes, I was just thinking about that. She goes, do you think of your father still? And I go, yeah. She goes, you know, in those years, it was still fresh in your mind. And you could not get over it. She goes, I remember that there was situations at night that you would wake up yelling. She goes, this went on. Do you remember at all? And I go, no. And she goes, you know, I think that sometimes when we talk, you always think that your life got fucked up when your mom died. I think, she goes, it was when you, and it was. And I thought of that conversation yesterday, and I must have gone home yesterday and just processed it in my sleep or something. And I think when Mercy, when my wife came to me that day, and I got into it with her, because we got into it like maybe a month or two later when they eat lunch. You know, my wife talks. She's a Gentile, so she just talks about whatever the fuck she talks about. You know, Gentiles just talk. You know, I love her with all my heart, but she starts talking, and I don't know, I reacted to it in a bad way, and she got upset. And it was, I was scared. I always thought about, I've forgotten over the years. I think my mom's pain made me forget about my dad's pain, but that's what started. That's what had me going. I always really wanted a dad. That's why I'm so close to Carmine today and Mr. T and Carlos Quintero. I'm really close with those guys, and that's why I think I work out. Like, my back hurts, not my lower back, thank God. We had to do wrestling things, so my neck hurts a little bit because we were learning how to grab somebody's back and get out of a choke.
You know,
like when they have you in a choke, how to grab their arm and push your body away. So my neck got a little tweaked. But it was very interesting that I wrote that out last night. That's what I wrote out while I was watching The Sopranos, how instead that would be the intro, how I was, and which I really am. That's my biggest fear. I love to see Mercy grow. You know, I would love to watch Mercy grow up. I would love to see Mercy at least be 18, you know, which would clock me at 68. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah.
It's a biggest fear. And I never had fears before. I never really... You die, you die. You know what I'm saying? You die when you die. There's nothing you can fucking do about it. You think as you're fucking floating away in a casket, you got control? You got no control. One morning you wake up, you go to put your fucking sneakers on, and you fucking punch the ticket. You know what I'm saying? That's what happens, man. That's just the way life is, or whatever, whatever God's decision works for you, you know?
How often do you think about death?
Never, until I had Mercy. Never. It's a thought I never like thinking about. I don't like thinking about people's death. When a thought crosses my mind, I try to get it out of there and I throw it in my mental wastebasket. I try really hard to avoid all those types of thoughts just because I don't like them just from being a kid and having all those people dying. So when somebody comes to me and says, such and such is sick, I, you know, it's like when they told me my best friend Jimmy Burkle was sick a couple of years ago and they said he had 6 months left. I didn't process it for 4 days. Then by the fifth day, I broke down and cried and cried. And I couldn't believe that this guy was dying. But we're all going to fucking die.
Right.
And in my mind, I decided, listen, he's going to die. We're all going to die. And it takes this moment for us to be nice to people. Like, that's what really pissed me off about Jimmy Burkle dying. It changed me because I was like, Jimmy Burkle may have 6 months to live. Let me be nicer to him. Why? Why? I don't know how many days that guy fucking Rouse has to live.
Right.
Why am I nice to him? I don't know how much, you know, when I go to fucking get coffee, I don't know how long that fucking black dude with the dreads has to live, nicest guy in the world, you know? I don't know. I don't know. We don't know. That's why you have to be nice, you know. Yeah, you have your moments, and but you try to be fucking nice, you know.
No, it's messed up when like a thought gets stuck in your head. Now, I've had a thought stuck in my head for months. That maybe it's because I'm getting older now, and I'm like when you're a kid, you get you're
whoa,
old.
Whoa, whoa, what old? You're 26.
Well, I know that, but like when I'm a kid, when you're a kid, you're like really self-involved. I think.
Self-involved in what?
And just yourself, like
right,
just
yeah,
everything.
You really are, yeah.
Just like you're the only thing in your own world, and I don't know why, but for the last few months, I'm obsessed with how like we're all like everything we go and do is about us, but then you look at somebody else and they have a whole new life that you have no idea about. And I'll finish this, but we have a call coming.
Billy Corbin in the house, Miami's favorite son.
Hello, mi amigo. ¿Cómo está?
Bien, y tú, mi socio. Dímelo.
Ah, sí, sí. Gracias.
What's going on? What is the state of Miami today? Drop it on me.
It's hot. It is hot.
Yeah, it's June. Yeah, it's fucking humid, muggy. The alligators don't even come out.
Yeah, it's a little scary today, too, because it's getting to that intense heat where, like, transformers are exploding. Not like the Michael Bay kind, but like the electricity kind. And then the police just shot a homeless who was holding a stick this morning in a park in Overtown. You know Overtown.
Yes.
And I don't know. It's like it's feeling a little bit like Do the Right Thing. Remember the end of the Spike Lee movie, you know, in the summer?
Right. So you think they're going to go off a little bit?
I don't know. We don't really riot here anymore. It's too hot, I think. But people just don't get, like, engaged politically or civically. Fortunately, we don't riot. But I just mean, like, we used to riot all the time, you know, in this town. But it just doesn't happen like that anymore.
If I tell you something, Billy Corbin, I think we're going to have a national riot soon. I think that the country is beginning to, it's like a powder keg, they call it. This is a little too much lately. This fucking guy in Texas with the chick, the little kid, what's going on here in L.A., what's going on in Miami. Either the media is blowing this cop thing up to get us up in arms, or something just isn't right lately.
Well, I think something's a little off. There's no question about that. But I just disagree that there's going to be that kind of national explosion of violence. I just don't think that Americans do that here. You know, we don't really take up arms against a system like that. You know, we're pretty, you know, it's a malaise. There's like a level, it's like, we all have enough. We all have just enough that the government lets us have that we're cool with it. You know, just don't abuse everybody or kill everybody. And of course, we're kind of a historically, traditionally racist country too. You know, like we just are. That's just the reality of our history.
You know, I'm looking at this. I remember being at a Chinese restaurant on a date, going to do comedy and watching the Rodney King, all that stuff. You know, and that all went down here. You know, that all went down in L.A.
All the riots,
we're living all the riots and stuff. And something happened this last week with that. The homeless guy, did you pay attention to that?
Out here
that got shot. He said they said he took the gun from six cops. He took one of the guns. There's six cops there. It happened downtown. Did you watch that?
No, I didn't see that.
Zeal, whatever case. Then they said that he was, you know, justified shooting. And then shit got ugly, and they had to redo it. And now they're looking at two cops for it. But if you see this, you could tell they fucking shot this guy. He's a little fucking homeless guy. You know, he was a young 26-year-old, 25-year-old, 27-year-old.
Oh, no.
And that one made me think about that day I was watching that Rodney King thing. Like, that one made me think. It's been a little bad here, Billy Corbin. It's been weird here also.
Yeah, I was living in Los Angeles during the Rodney King trial. And I, you know, the riots broke out, obviously, when the officers were acquitted, and we were all on lockdown. There was that curfew. I was living in Westwood, and we had an apartment that was kind of like on a hill, so we were on like the basement level, like under the street. And finally we climbed out. I remember the the series finale of The Cosby Show, of all things, aired on that Thursday night, and Bill Cosby came on the NBC affiliate in L.A. and, like, had this pre-show kind of, like, announcement, you know, this call for, like, calm and peace and justice. And then we watched The Cosby Show finale and came up over ground, and, you know, all the stores were, you know, had their plate glass windows broken, and there was, like, shit on the, you know, packages of, like, shit that had been looted on the ground. And it's interesting that you say it kind of feels like that again. I get that sense here too, but not in the uprising kind of way. I get it in terms of the political environment and the toxic relationship between the police and the community, but I'm not feeling it from, in Miami anyway, on that activism level that you're talking about.
Listen, you know me, I'm not a big activist, but I'm seeing just fucking, I live in L.A., and every 2 days in the morning news, it's something different. It's something fucking different, man.
I think that's what we're talking. It's like not activism. It's not like they're trying to even make a change. It's almost just like brawls a little bit. Just people are getting fed up with things and they're going crazy. Like
but the cops are going crazy. It's not the people.
Well, people are going crazy
too. How the
fuck
did that happen in Texas with that dude stepping on the girl and pulling a gun out? You know what's going on all over the country. You know these people have fucking cameras in their phones.
Yeah.
Why are you acting a fucking mutt? Like, why are you acting like this? You know that they're watching cops.
Let me tell you the unfortunate legacy of the Rodney King situation is that the lesson should have been, we are now seeing or starting to see in that era the ubiquity of cameras. You know, we didn't have them in our phones yet, obviously. We were, you know, 10 years away from that. But there are cameras everywhere, whether they're surveillance, whether, you know, people just have handy cams, you know, like we did in those days. And the lesson should have been everybody's got to behave themselves. And by the way, that's police, civilian, you know, everybody, you know, be on your best behavior. The eye in the sky is watching us all. And when they got acquitted at Rodney King, the lesson went out, or the message went out to police officers that you are actually free to behave. Look at the guy in Staten Island, for Christ's sake, that was choked to death on camera and was not charged by a grand jury. And you know, where basically the defense was, you're going to believe me or your lying eyes. I mean, it's incredible.
We live in very strange times. What's going on in your world? What's been happening, Billy C?
Well, it's funny, this kind of, you know, we always talk about these issues every time I come on, and we finally made a movie, you know, documentary in Dogfight that we just released that kind of, in its own way, addresses, you know, these kind of racial issues, the income disparity, and I think everything that seems to be coming to a head in America now and the way, you know, some of the inner city and underprivileged communities in Miami have dealt with it is a sort of Thunderdome approach to economic recovery, and so I've been just completely consumed with the of Dogfight.
The my favorite was the four black women that gave you the color commentary after every fight. That was as interesting as fuck.
No pun intended with the color commentary, I hope.
No, not at all. Fucking hilarious. You know, I had saw that guy before with Kimbo Slice years ago on TV. So as soon as I saw him, I was like, who the fuck is that? I saw him, you know, I've seen him before. And it blew my mind, that fucking thing. And the way you shot it just looked so amazing. The shots, the punches to the fucking head, the dude knocked out. Oh, my fucking God. What do these guys walk with? How much money do they make for those things? $50?
Yeah, not enough, man. Not enough to take that kind of abuse. And more importantly, you know, they're running the risk of not only, you know, the injuries that they'll sustain from the other fighter, but if they kill the other guy in one of these illegal, unsanctioned backyard bare-knuckle brawl events, they're going to prison. And the promoter, you know, Dada 5000, who's like the Don King of the backyard, who used to roll with Team Kimbo until he decided to do these kind of illegal block party, you know, fighting events and putting together his own cards, he could go to prison too just for promoting these illegal fights. And the purses for the fighters all are contingent upon how much cash they collect at the gate. So they get $20 a head or $50 for what they call VIP, which are those plastic folding chairs around this makeshift 12x12 ring in Dada's mother's backyard. I saw fighters win as much as $400 for a fight, or Dada also would give like $50 to the loser in a fight like that, or as little as $200 in a fight, and $20 or $25 for the loser, and then these guys basically go to the ER after they get their money and get patched up.
That's fucking crazy.
It shows how bad things are getting. People are willing to do that to make a little. But it also made me like. I thought when I was watching it, I think Joe would really like some guys just going around when there's a parade saying there's going to be a fight, and he sets up his backyard, and it's just he's just doing it. Like,
it's American ingenuity. It's what I always talk about. Now let me ask you this: these guys that are fighting, are they fighting? They make a money. They make their living is fighting, or this is just what they do to take that money and go buy crack or whatever the fuck they're doing. You know, I'm just asking. I don't know. I don't know what the motivation is. You know, I stole to make money to fucking snort coke. You know, I didn't steal, and I didn't have to steal Billy Corbin, but it was the easiest path of resistance. You understand me? So for these guys in these hoods, what do they do? I mean, they didn't look like druggies or nothing.
I think it's a fair question. A lot of the guys are ex-cons. A lot of them, have been in and out of jail, in and out of prison. They don't have a lot of, or they feel like they don't have a lot of legit opportunity. And for better or worse, true or not, they believe that this is their greatest opportunity, not only at a little money to help feed their families, but themselves, but at an opportunity to get discovered. Because that's what Kimbo is the godfather of the game. He's the one who established this, for lack of a better term, business model, where you videotape yourself fighting in these backyard fights. You upload the footage and hope to get discovered by professional MMA trainers or promoters. And it happens. I mean, it's a bit of a hollow victory, but we saw in the year and a half we were shooting, we saw like three or four guys go pro right from the backyard. And of course, there was two guys that didn't even live that long.
You always have an eye for, in your documentaries, Cocaine Cowboys, the one about the college rape, the fights and all this shit. You're such a nice guy. You're such a sweet. You're like the Stephen King of documentaries. You know that? This was the darkest one for sure. This one, because I used to go to Miami a lot as a kid, and I used to drive not through that particular neighborhood, but neighborhoods like that. You know, when we used to go to Flagler or wherever the fuck my aunt was taking us, my godmother. And I would look around and go, what the fuck do these people have? And then on the other side of that, listen, man, from the age of 14, and I'm not lying to you, from the age of 14 to the age of, let's put 10 on the short side, 17, I saw one of those every week. Not one of those backyard brawls, but one of those styles of fight that were tremendous. This country has forgotten about those things. That's where it all starts. We don't see fist fights no more in your neighborhood growing up.
No,
you said you saw one on Highland the other day.
I wasn't there, but yeah, it was on. Some guy filmed it.
But I saw that shit growing up in neighborhood. You know, in my neighborhood, when you left school at 3, somebody said tonight behind the high school, Kenny Edler's fighting this fucking guy. And you went and you got some beers, you got a couple fucking joints, and you sat down at 8 o'clock and you saw two white guys beat the fuck out of each other. And then they stopped when somebody's nose got broken or somebody's tooth fell out. And everybody got up and hugged, and we all walked away.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier when you talked about sort of what people are willing to do, and that this is this is just another hustle. And I think that, in a way, all of our documentaries have kind of been like these twisted take on the American dream. You know, people who just, we all wake up in the morning and figure out how are we going to get ours, how are we going to support ourselves or our families, and some people obviously have different opportunities than others, or some people are willing to do, they're willing to skirt the law, they're willing to get into a 12x12 ring and participate in what some people have said is tantamount to human cockfighting or dogfighting. And the truth is that, none of us get to choose who our parents are. You know, we're born and we got to play the hand we're dealt. And some people make good decisions, some people make bad ones, but we just all, like, I always say I'm a white dude in America. I was born on second base, man, you know, at least on first, you know. So, but some people aren't even born in the park, let alone the dugout. You know, they never get a chance at bat in this country, you know. And people watch this footage in this movie and they say, Bill, this doesn't even look like America. It looks like the third world. And I said, it is the third world. It's Miami-Dade County. It's, you know, we are the third world.
You're a beautiful fucking man, Billy, for even going down. I'm watching them, and I'm going, what is Billy thinking, standing around with his little camera right now with two of his buddies and a sound guy, and there's 80 black guys that'll fucking slice his neck at any minute. They could just take him out of there and beat him up and bury you under the fucking ring. You know, Billy, what gave you the idea to do this? What was the first thing that inspired you to do Dogfight?
Well, we have an alt-weekly down here called the Miami New Times, who had covered it. We all knew about Kimbo. Like you said, you saw Kimbo, you know, online and on TV way back when. But what we didn't know is that somebody had kind of, you know, the Dada 5000, this guy, Dafir Harris, had kind of taken up the mantle and started to organize these backyard brawls. And as soon as we heard about him and his family, we wanted to tell that story. And I got to tell you, I was, with the exception of maybe one occasion where a fight outside the ring broke out, I was never scared in West Bronx. We always felt it was always very warm and welcoming, and it was like a block party, the whole scene. And we had the best food ever, the best barbecue, the best fried catfish, the best seafood rice. I mean, everything was like, all the neighbors came out. It turned into like a cottage industry for the block, you know, for the community. And I don't know. I think also because we did Cocaine Cowboys and we did the U for ESPN 30 for 30 and broke. So a lot of folks like respected us and our work and were excited that we were just there telling the story of a neighborhood that I think is mostly, you know, ignored and neglected by the media and even by the representatives and leaders and politicians.
First of all, that neighborhood is my type of neighborhood. If you want me to lie to you, this neighborhood where I live in and people walk by exercising and they're all fucking white. I had to put a sign in front of my house the other day. I got a camera. If I see your dog shitting in my yard, I'm going to shoot you and the fucking dog and shove the shit back up your ass. Somebody took it down after 3 hours. But that's my point. They walk around. They got every opportunity to have class, but then they have no fucking class. They hide behind their color and their BMW and think, like, you think they have class. But, you know, it's like when I live two blocks away from the train station, okay? I see a BMW on my block, or like a nice Mustang on my block. So this guy paid $500 a month for the car, but he don't want to go for an extra $10 for the parking spot. I scratch his fucking car. That's it. He'll never come in my fucking neighborhood again. I hate those motherfuckers. You know, they got no class. They got no fucking, you got to buy a BMW and park in front of my fucking house and walk three blocks to save $10. Go fuck your mother, you fucking miserable fuck. That neighborhood, when I walk into that neighborhood where you take that fight at, guess what, bitch? I know where the fuck I stand. You know, those people, that's what this country used to be about, block parties. We've forgotten. That's just a block party with a fist fight. That's all that is. That's a block party with a fist fight. The neighbors get involved. There's rice. There's food. There was kids there. They're throwing a fucking frisbee. The sun's out. That's a fucking neighborhood.
And I have to say, at the time, unfortunately, it's not true anymore. But at the time, you also saw, I think, some really exceptional community policing. You know, you saw the police dealing with people, you know, on a realistic level, you know, on the ground, that, you know, not the way that lawmakers in Washington, D.C. or in Tallahassee here in Florida, you know, our capital, think that people, you know, that criminals and lawbreakers should be dealt with, but the reality of understanding the culture of a community. And the police realized, you know, in a neighborhood racked with crime, with drug dealing, with violence, they would suddenly be out on a Saturday afternoon and it was quiet on the streets. People weren't out. People weren't selling drugs on the corner. People weren't shooting each other or robbing stores. Where were they? They were in the backyard watching a fight. And yeah, maybe they were smoking weed and doing some gambling and some betting. But the only violence occurring in the neighborhood during those hours was between two consenting adults in that 12 by 12 ring. And the police said, listen, you know, for as much as we can, you know, we had plausible deniability. We don't know what's going on in this private backyard with the chain link fence and the blue tarp up. If someone obviously calls 911, they'll do their job and they'll come out and do their thing. But why would they shut it down? Why would they, what are they going to do, launch tear gas over the fence and then, like, push everybody out of the backyard onto the street? That's just going to escalate a situation that doesn't need it. So for a while, the police handled that neighborhood with, I think, exemplary community policing. And again, unfortunately, the fights aren't going on anymore, and you have police basically arresting every black kid who's got a nickel bag, for no reason at all, and completely destroying their lives and putting them into the system. We have a real problem here. You know, in America, I mean, black people are 13 to 18% of the population, and white and black people use marijuana at exactly the same rate. And yet, you're three times more likely to be arrested for a minor pot crime or pot possession if you're black in America. In Miami-Dade County, you're six times more likely to be arrested for marijuana if you're black in this county, which is crazy. It's crazy.
Back to something you said before that. Right now, if this was Joe Rogan's show, three quarters of the people, because they're the smart, intelligent kind, whatever the fuck they're thinking this week. But an intelligent, somebody from, and I hate to say this, somebody like from Kansas or somebody from a decent state that's listening to you about that's exemplary police work would sit there and go, what's he talking about? They're breaking the law at all levels. But that's what the problem is. You can't arrest everybody. And there's a story behind the crime. When I was a kid, I got in trouble every fucking 10 days, Billy. But when the cops got there, they listened to the story. You know, if you walk into a house, right? If I get a 911 call, all right, for domestic violence, and I show up at Lee's and I see his little Spanish girlfriend on the floor with a black eye, I got to take Lee in, you know? But if I get to your house and Lee's got a stab wound and she's got a missing tooth, and there's drugs everywhere, and this is the eighth call in 3 years, I'm just wasting my time. I'm really wasting. This is what they do. This is what they do. They drug up, they fuck, then they stab each other. This is what they do. This is their interpretation of love. This is not domestic violence. This is love in their fucking world. I'm going to break them up. She's going to do more drugs. He's going to OD, and then they're both going to die for no fucking reason. I go home. Listen, I clean them up. I make sure that there's no knives around. Got no guns, no. All right, I'm leaving. I'm going to go home. Keep fucking, keep eating that, drink that vodka. And there's couples like that. Whatever. But in most white America's world, they're breaking the law. See, in my world, there's a black and white as a cop. A cop's got to show up and analyze the situation. Half the people that get arrested shouldn't get fucking arrested in this country. Half of them. Listen, hear them out. Anything here, it's two people having a misunderstanding. Let's fucking write them up. Let's give them a warning. Let them get the fuck out of here.
Right. And, Billy, how much do you think in that area, like, they police themselves? Because, like Joey said, you probably walked in there with $100,000 worth of equipment, but if someone stole from you, that would make them look bad. And you're trying to highlight the area. So I would bet you probably had less of an issue in a quote-unquote bad neighborhood.
Going in, we didn't know what to expect, so we took certain insurance measures, you know, in terms of the safety of the crew, our equipment, what to do in the event of a police raid, what to do in the event that shots rang out. We didn't know. But after the first event, it seemed perfectly cool and calm, and I really credit Dada with that. He was an anchor. He was a force for good, and not only in the backyard, but in that community. And people just didn't want to fuck up and act a fool with Dada around, you know? I call him the mayor of West Bryan. Nobody wanted to deal with that kind of pressure, as Dada would say. And so we just felt safe. And like you said, the fighters are there doing this to get noticed, to get discovered, to make a name, to hopefully create more opportunities for themselves. Again, for better or worse, I'm not kind of condoning these life decisions, but the decisions men were making, these fights were happening whether we were there or not. And so I think they were just appreciative that, like, as they called us, quote unquote, the cocaine cowboys guys, you know, came into their community and were noticing these young men and and literally they're fighting, trying to fight their way out to a better life for themselves and their families.
It was a good film. You did good, man.
You know,
those type of documentaries is bringing something to the forefront. and a good documentary should rub your stomach a little way. And like, there was parts of that thing, and I was like, what the fuck's Billy doing? But then all the pieces came together, you know? Like, I'm like, what the fuck? And I like that about it. You have a great eye, Billy. You're very good at what the fuck you do, man. I don't know what I'm doing, but you do. I just get you. I'm flying off of your lead, cocksucker. What's next in the raconteur world?
Next up, we got some really great doc projects that unfortunately I can't talk about yet, but we are working on the script for the dramatic pilot, an adaptation of Cocaine Cowboys, our documentary from 06. So we're finally moving ahead on that, and it's looking real good. We hope to be shooting that no later than next year.
You know, I'm a Cuban drug dealer on the series, so don't forget about me. Yo al español meto balazo lo que tú necesitas, ¿sabes? Really, I'm gonna hire you to go back to Cuba with me so I could say hello to my sister. For everybody who's listening, I applied for my passport on Friday with an attorney.
No way.
And hopefully we get it. I'm taking my wife and the baby to fucking Cuba to meet my sister and the rest of those
motherfuckers.
I'm also going to exhume my dad's body when I'm there. I'm going to try to exhume it so I get a half a mil. Well, I should have gotten a half a mil in 66 from Prudential, the Rock Insurance, but my dad's death certificate was never signed. So it'll be 50 years of interest of half a million dollars. What do you think, Billy? Can I sign you a piece and you come to Cuba with me and we'll fucking dig up me seeing my sister and the whole fucking deal? We'll uncover the truth about my mother, about her stabbing the guy when she was 16 and killing him. And come, they probably still got a warrant out for
her. I'm in for 10%.
Fuck you, 10%, cocksucker.
That's amazing. I've been wanting to go my whole life, but certainly since they opened it up earlier this year, I think that's outstanding that you're going. I hope that all works out. I'd love to go with you.
I really do, but I can't wait to see my sister. I can't wait to see the look on her face. And I got cousins and fucking uncles, and you know, my cousins are the National Cuban Band. They're the touring band. Emmy Alfonso and Eki Alfonso, ex Alfonso. That's what they do. It's the other side of my family. That's the Valdezes. That's my mom's side of the family. But my dad's side of the Diaz is there in Camagüey. So I'm really thinking of shooting this, going back and seeing it from my eyes. And I don't know how I'm going to do it. I like to do it rough, you know, Billy, like on a boat, like a 12-man boat. We all go back there with the cameras and see the rafts floating, the unmanned rafts floating at like the 50-mile. They say at like the 50-mile point, you see like deflated pieces of rubber and milk containers and wood from fucking rafts and boats that didn't make it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's fucking really eerie, they say, you know. Have you interviewed one of those people, Billy, who did the raft trip?
I haven't interviewed them on camera, but obviously you're in Miami long enough, you meet people who came here by any means necessary.
And what have they said to you? Have you spoken to them at all in detail? And when they tell you the story of that journey, those 90 miles, Jesus fucking Christ. There's a cab driver in Vegas.
You hear stories of people who did make it, who were on board with dead people, you know, with people who didn't make it. And I mean, there's just horrible stories and tragic stories about what people were willing to do to get to this country. All the more reason we should make this country the best we can make it. Because, you know, these people believe in this place, and they're willing to risk their lives and the lives of their families to get here, which is a pretty powerful statement about America.
It really is, my brother. No, Billy, I really like dogfighting. I really wanted to talk to you. When you were in town, I didn't get to see you last time. I know you did Rogan's. I know you're busy as fuck when you come in, but hopefully I'll be down there before the end of the year, and I'll give you a little hug, cocksucker. How's the girlfriend doing?
Hello. Well, you'll certainly be in Miami when the Cuban government deports you.
They ain't fucking deporting me, guy, all right? I'm walking into that island. I'm telling them all to suck my dick. I'm personal friends with friends, okay?
We know the first person to take a Chiba Chew on Cuba.
You think they'll fucking deport me when I get there?
Well, I will say that if they do fellate you, Castro's mouth would be much like a vagina, I would think, with teeth, though.
No, they're not going to
fuck. Because of that beard, you know.
He's too old. They're not going to fucking do nothing to me, man. That's it. We put them off the terrorist list. Cubans aren't terrorists no more. So I think it's time to get my fucking passport. I'm not going to Canada. They're not going to let me into Canada. If I get the passport, I want to go to England. I want to go to maybe Hong Kong and eat some twice-cooked pork. And that's it. Go to Cuba. What do you think? Maybe go to Israel and go down to the wall and leave a note.
The promised land.
The promised land. So you got some shit going on, Billy. I'm happy you had time to call in today, brother. No, it was a great fucking film, Billy. You did it again. You know, I thought we're broke. You busted the fucking bank, but no, you came back strong. You're like Led Zeppelin in the 70s. Every album keeps getting better and better. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I love to call in anytime I can. You know that. I miss you.
And you you tweeted something 2 days ago. Jesus Christ. Is this shit? That's the fucking TV show, Billy. 24 hours in Miami, like, and it's like CSI Miami or something, but you just, those stories that you fucking print up every day, that's a TV show. This shit cannot be happening. And it seems like it only happens in Florida. Like, Florida has this fucking Martian population, and they infect everybody else with a touch or something. These people act weirder than fucking weird. What was the one from 2 days ago, Billy? Billy, 2 days ago, you had something that I had to fucking take my glasses off on the computer. I can't remember what the fuck it is now.
Oh, shit. I don't even remember. I posted so many. I mean, there was the woman who called 911 because her pot dealer took her money, didn't give her the weed.
No.
We had, what did we have? We had,
I love when you put that police pictures up. Like that booking photos.
There was 10 women who were arrested at a strip club because they gave, like, illegal lap dances to undercover cops. Which is ridiculous.
Illegal lap dances.
Yeah, there's, like, they can't have contact. There's, like, there's very specific ordinances governing lap dances. So the police, with all their resources, did an undercover lap dance sting at a strip club and arrested 10 girls.
Now, every city in Florida has different strip club rules, correct?
Every individual municipality in the whole state.
Like what I could do in Fort Lauderdale, I might not be able to do in Miami.
Oh, dude, what you can do in Miami, you can't do in Miami Beach right over the bridge.
So what do you mean? What can you do in Miami that you can't do in Miami Beach?
Oh, great question. So in Miami Beach, they have a law. This goes back, you know, almost 100 years to the beginning of Miami Beach, which just turned 100 this year. In Miami Beach, you can have a topless bar that serves full liquor, but if you go full nude, you can't serve liquor.
That's everywhere, though.
That's a ridiculous. No, that's not everywhere. In Miami, you could full nude, full liquor bar.
Really?
Absolutely.
Oh, I didn't know that. I know, like, out here, if they're nude, in Colorado, if they're nude, you can't drink. It's got to be BYOB.
Oh yeah, LA. You got like the pasties or whatever. I mean,
right.
Which
one of my fucking 10? I want to see a chick with pasties on a pussy. I go there. I want to see that fucking clit.
Was it the iguana clogging the toilet? Did that freak you out? I was just looking at his Twitter. There was this lady found an iguana in her toilet.
Yeah, I can't deal with that. That scares the shit out of me.
You know,
that's one of my worst fears.
In New York, possums were coming up.
No.
And rats. And the fire department would come over and put a net, like a steel net, in between the toilet seat and the toilet.
Yeah.
And they lift up the toilet seat and they would shoot it right through the fucking thing or stab it with a fucking knife. Tremendous. Tremendous. Billy Corbin, I love you, cocksucker. Good luck, and I'll see you in a few months. We'll call you again, and we'll talk some politics, Miami. When are you running for mayor? He hung up already, that fuck.
Yeah.
Let me give some shout-outs, and we'll get the fuck out of here. See, folks, it turned into something. This is the way a podcast should be, a little conversation with me and Lee, a little chit-chat with a good fucking guest, and we're out of here. Abadu, babadu. The king of autism. How you doing, cocksucker? Brandon Cruz, what's happening? A.K.A. Johnny Arch. I love you. Burbank 108. 818. Get healthy, cocksucker. You've been away. I don't see you. I got other people parking now on the block. Andres Ortiz, you got a new church member there. Congratulations on your son or daughter. I saw the picture on Twitter. Very beautiful. God bless you. T-Bone, get it together. Charlie Powerhouse, you bad motherfucker. And Jesus Shuttlesworth. You know Uncle Joey's here for you. You know what I'm saying? What's up with you, cocksucker? What do you got planned for the weekend?
I don't know what we got planned this weekend. Oh, Paula got a scholarship. So she's going on Saturday night. She's bringing her mom. She only can bring one person. So she's going to bring her mom. So I have Saturday night to myself. But we're going to go get dinner on Sunday.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Saturday, come to the store with your Uncle Joey.
Perfect.
At 10:45, you come out, you jump up and down. But it was really, it really fucked with me last night that I realized, yeah, my father was big in my life. You know, I feel bad for my father. I really fucking do.
Why do you feel bad for your father?
My real father was a really good guy, man. You know, in all the conversations I had about him, there was just something about him. He was very generous, you know. We didn't pay for my mother's wake because the funeral director, he had helped out when he first came from Cuba. He brought him Christmas presents for his sons and his daughters. My father was a decent guy. And he just fucking died a weird death. And my mother, my uncle, who hated everybody, my uncle and me even stopped talking. We haven't spoken since Christmas Eve. He says that... he even said that my dad was a good guy. He goes, I don't know what he's doing with your mom. Even he said, he goes, I couldn't see the correlation. He was a big, good-looking Cuban white dude, and he had personality. He dressed nice and shit, and he worked hard. And, you know, he had his faults. You know, he did some drugs, and that's what he died from. But I couldn't imagine being him. Like, I was looking at that picture of Mercy last night, and I was thinking to myself, my last 3 minutes on this earth, what would I think about? You know, I'm laying on a bed or on a floor hit by a bullet or I'm having a heart attack. What are you thinking about? You know, and I know that from my conversations with people, my dad was thinking about, I mean, we were that tight. I changed his life. My mom said he was out of his mind until you came along. And he was always with you. You know, I have no memories of what he looked like or anything, but I do remember driving in a car with him, like him.
Really?
In a steering wheel, me being a steering wheel. You know, I remember that in Cuba.
No.
In a Cadillac. Yeah, I remember all that shit. I saw the pictures of his Cadillacs in Cuba, and it's just weird. And I've always felt that he's watched over me really tight. Like, I've always really believed that in my heart and in my soul. A lot of times I'm indecisive, and I'll get a thought to my mind or something, and I've always really believed that, you know, at times. So
you talk about what you think might have happened if your mom had survived. How do you think your life would have been different if he had survived?
Well, he was a businessman. You know, he was making a lot of money. And he was opening up Cuban restaurants and sandwich places. And I don't know. But I know I wouldn't have walked around with this thing on my back. You know, I wouldn't have walked around. You know, I talk about being allergic to peanuts, how you have a jacket on your back. When a parent dies in an early age, you don't have a jacket on your back like being a snitch or being a fag or having 1 foot or something. But you have this... You have this thing inside of you that you're missing something as a child, you know. I forgot that conversation with Mercedita, her name. But I do know that it didn't give me as much pleasure in doing shit as a child because everybody else had a dad and I did. And don't get me wrong, I had a lot of love. I had my godfather would take me to the movies on Sundays and I had friends of my mom's and my mom's, you know, couples that treated me like just like I was a son. But there was always something missing, you know? And just when I was starting to figure, you know, my mom remarried, and I guess I put stock into Juan as a dad, and I maybe neglected thinking about my dad. He was gone. But then as I got older, I started thinking about him and what he wanted from me, what I heard from my mom. And I think him and my mom wanted me to be, they just wanted me to be happy and to do something with my life, which I did. You know, I didn't do what they wanted. They wanted me to go to the service and be a fucking attorney and shit. But I ended up doing something with my life, which is big for me in my world.
Hell yeah.
You know, I can't believe it. I can't believe I ended up doing something with my life. Don't get me wrong. At all. 20 years ago, I was still saying to myself, I can't believe I didn't do anything with my life. Well, now I got an occupation, you know, and I did something with my life, and I feel okay about it, you know.
It's gonna be crazy going back to Cuba. Are you even thinking about it at all yet? Or are you just
no?
It's too overwhelming.
I've been talking to a friend of mine, Ivan Salivary. He was a UFC fighter, and Ivan's been trying to get me to take care of my paperwork in Seattle so I could go back. But I spoke to Ivan last week. It's just too much work. It's too much work for the bang. So why don't we just eliminate the Seattle warrant and just go for the fucking passport? If they turn us down for the passport, then we have a fucking problem. But I finally got an attorney. I got a company in Wilshire that you pay them, and they do all the legwork for you and everything.
Oh, cool.
So I finally made the fucking jump. You know, I was very indecisive for a while. Canada, I don't know what's going to happen. I got to put some. That's my next move. Let's just get the fucking passport, and let's see where we need to attack, you know?
Right.
But I'm really happy that I fell asleep last night, and I got up, and I had that brain fart. Because now I kind of have an intro from my book, you know?
What is the point of the intro? Like, what do you want to get out of it?
I want to let people know where I was when I, you know, where my mind was. Like, I would read, like, I did Nick Swanson's movie. You know, the one that got...
The porn one, right?
Yeah, the porn one, and Don Johnson was in it. And about a month after that, his wife had a baby, or his girlfriend had a baby, and I sat there one day, and like, how selfish is this? To have a child at 54 or 55, you know, as a man. But then it happened to me, you know, and when it happened, it's something that it was an accident. Like, it wasn't me and Terry weren't planning on having a child. So it wasn't like I was being selfish from the jump. But then I started thinking about my doubts, you know, and that's what the book is about. The intro is about the doubts I had and how I ended up being me, you know. I didn't have a dad, but I still made it. I still did something with my life, you know. I didn't have a mom, but I still persevered, you know. I really wanted to get Darren Carter on, and we can't keep, because Darren Carter's an orphan. He was raised in Sacramento in an orphanage.
Oh, wow.
And he's a great guy. He turned out great. And I really want to have him on to talk about his experiences in the orphanage and how the doubts he had grown up. Whether the same doubts I had growing up, you know, I had, and then after 15, I had more doubts. After my mother died, you have these doubts about society and who you are and why this happened to you.
How can you not when you're that young?
That's the question you ask yourself. And that was where the anger comes from for a long time. That's why I wanted to shoot somebody. That's why my head was in limbo, because you can't figure out where this comes from. You're raised Jewish. You go to temple. I don't know what the fuck they tell you in temple. Jesus was a millionaire and he bought land. I don't know what the fuck they tell you, you know?
It's pretty much the gist of it.
But in church, they tell you that there's a God and he created you and blah, 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 and there's seven sacraments. And this is me at this age. This is who I turned to first for the answers, because I didn't have the answers. So who do you turn to? You turn to your God who created everybody, or who they fucking told you made everything. And guess what? He got no answers. He don't take collect calls. He's got no fucking... He don't take collect calls, God. So there you are sitting there thinking to yourself, what the fuck? You know, how do you figure this out? So you get pissed off at God first. So you get pissed off at whoever your God is. You know, they took away the most important thing in your life. Who do you get pissed at? When somebody runs over your grandmother as she's coming out of Rouse, that's one thing. You could go to jail and send him hate mail. But when your mom dies of natural causes, you can't figure it out, you know, and why this happens to you. I have a friend that his dad died 3 years ago. He calls me once a week. In fact, let me tell you an interesting story. I got an email from Gary the other day, a friend of mine, Gary Hartman, I grew up with. Gary was whose family I stayed with when I was in the Lamb in 82 in Sarasota when I went to see Road Warrior every day.
Right.
He fucking just called me out of the blue.
That's crazy.
And we hadn't spoken in about 2 or 3 years, and he still lives in Sarasota. He hasn't seen Mr. T. You know, I asked him, did you bump into T yet? And he goes, no, I haven't. But the beauty of it is that he said to me, I really got to tell you something, man. My dad passed. He went through a hard time. And he passed about a year and a half ago. Excuse me. And he says that not one day he doesn't think about me. Because he says, as a grown adult, he has this pain. He's 52, like me. He says he has this pain of missing his father and how he didn't do the right thing in front of his father for a long time. And he goes that he thinks about me, how hard it must have been for me. So he called me. He lost my number also. He went online and emailed me on the webpage and said that he wanted to know how I did it those years, how hard was it for me. And I don't think it was hard, because I was, like you, I was focused on, you know, when my mom first died, I was focused on, what did you say before? I was selfish.
You're a kid.
You're focused on getting your dick sucked and playing basketball and smoking pot with the Leonard Skinner. So that was the conversation. And I really have thought about that with Gary. I'm very fortunate because I still talk to those friends, and they give me like a slight reminder from time to time that what happened. And I like thinking about it for like a minute, but then I take my mind out of that right away because I don't want to lurk there. That's why the book has been hard for me at times, because there's times I go there. The main important thing for me when writing this book would be the period of what happened after my mom died. To me, I still want to tap in to what my mindset was those 7 or 8 years before I went to prison. I would really love to present it to you people to show you what the fuck I was thinking about and where I came back from. Like, I know people come to me after shows and they go, Joey, you know what, man, I did this and this and this, and I'm really having a hard time. I don't even know where the fuck to start, you know?
Right.
I don't know where I started either. I just know I had a desire not to be at that place.
Is part of the issue you're having, though, is that you always, you say that a lot, that when you're having thoughts you don't like, you stop yourself from thinking about it. Do you think maybe you have to let yourself go there, like, kind of, like, search for it?
Sure, you have to. You have to, you know? And it hurts sometimes,
yeah.
You know? But you have to go to that area and sit down, and sometimes I'll put a song on from that time to really take me there.
That sets it off, really?
Yeah, sometimes something from that time will set it off for me. The other day I was in the car listening to Ozzy's Boneyard, and I heard Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. And that takes me back to that time. It sparks that little anger I had. At that time, it wasn't the pain as much as the anger. It wasn't the confusion as much as the anger. You know, after somebody dies, you have this big hunk of confusion. It's just fucking, it's a bad dream that doesn't shut off. And there's a part in your mind where you're like, I'm going to shut this motherfucker off.
Right.
Get up, go brush my teeth, have breakfast, and move on with my life. This dream is getting out of fucking control right now. But it's not a fucking dream. It's your life. It's so surreal that it feels like a fucking dream that you're living through it. It's so surreal when you're walking the steps and, you know, making funeral arrangements and talking to your friends about her life and what your next move is. And this has to be with everybody. This is why when somebody passes and they post on Facebook or something, I always write something now. I always, because I wish somebody would have wrote something to me in those days. There was no manual. There was no YouTube.
Especially at 15.
At 15, there was no nothing. There was nobody I could turn to. I only knew one person, Regina Gordon, who her mother died, and she was my age. And I could see that she was a wild card. So I knew that, or eventually, I'd become a wild card. I was always wild, but this was going to fucking just make me even crazier.
Were you wild before your dad passed away?
Well, I was 3, so.
Because it's just, we were speaking with Steve about how, like, you don't know what's going to affect kids. And it just, if you were that close with your dad, like, do you ever think maybe like that
oh,
is
yeah.
where your anger comes from?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It must.
Sure. And issues of abandonment, you know, like I get pissed off sometimes, like at certain things with Terry. Like mm-hmm. when Terry goes home, I get a little, my feelings get hurt sometimes. That might be issues sometimes when I leave my feelings, you know. But at least I'm big enough. I've known this for years, you know. Sure, my mom said that for years. Every time the door would open, I would stop what I was doing and look at the door, whether it was at the bar or at the house. That fucking killed me when I was older.
Yeah.
You know, because I would read the... He always interested me. The people that I grew up around were always dear friends with him. Like, the really people who kind of took care of me growing up were really good friends with him. They weren't the best people. They weren't the best quality of people. But they had something that I have today, and they passed it on their heart. You know, I was talking to Randall, the guy I'm writing the script with, about a character named Tati. Tati was a 24/7 bad guy that had grown up with Manolo. He had grown up with my dad. He was just he was a murderer. He took drugs from people and shot them and had no remorse, and he was fucking nuts. But he loved me in a way. He had no sons. So in his eyes, he was my son. You know, when I was in the 6th grade, he gave me coke one time in a capsule when he went to get me a haircut. He used to take me to the city to get haircuts.
Yeah.
When I was like in the 6th and 7th grade. And he told me once, he goes, I saw that skinny girl by your house the other day. You eating her pussy yet? And I didn't know what to say. I'm like, no.
How old were you?
I'm like 11 or 12. And he gave me like this fucking capsule filled with cocaine. And he's like, next time she comes over, eat her pussy with this cocaine. I'm like, how crazy is this? I had that little capsule in the back of my drawer, hidden behind like a notebook, so it wouldn't roll out when you open the drawer.
Oh, wow.
And one day my mom came in like at 4 in the morning. She's like, Tati just fucking told me that he gave you a little bit of coke for fucking put on a girl's pussy, and you took it. What the fuck is wrong with you? Give me that right now. And I'm like, I don't have it. What you doing? I threw it away. I had it. I never fucking, I think I gave it back.
That's hysterical.
But Tati was, you know, Rodolfo Castrillon, the guy in Miami that raised me. Rodolfo was a great guy. He was tight with Manolo, but Rodolfo brought it. Rodolfo went to fucking jail for murder. He brought it, bro. These were friends of my father's that my mother honored after my dad died. You know, like she couldn't not call him back. They wanted to have contact with me. They wanted to give me money. They wanted to be there for me. You know, so these people he left in my life, I learned a lot from, you know. Yeah. There was this guy, Pepe Cojo. Cojo means that you have a limp. You know, Pepe was a friend of my dad's in Cuba, and he came back, and he used to date this woman, Dean, at my mom's bar, and he ended up knocking her up, and they had a kid together. And Pepe and I were tight growing up. Pepe and me, I was there when Hank Aaron hit the home run, 7-15, broke.
Oh, no way.
I was like a little boy at his house. I still remember him having a daughter. If I'm 52, the daughter's got to be 49, maybe 48, 47. I was a few years older than her.
Okay.
You know, and I remember being at the house with him. He taught me how to shoot a gun when I was a kid. He taught me how to play baseball. Pepe was a big, healthy guy. And one day, him and my mom got into an argument over me. I gave Pepe a hard time, and Pepe pushed me. And I went home and told my mom, and my mom called Pepe and went off on him. And I knew Pepe's mom. I knew the wife, the daughter. You know, my mom was friends with him. And after my mom died, one day I was walking down Bender Street, and the horn blew, and it was Pepe. And he goes, how you doing? You thought I forgot about you. I'm here to give you some money. He must have given me like $2,000. And he gave me his number in Miami, and then I lost contact with him. But he had good friends, man, that cared about me, you know? They were just from a different cut. They were no fucking reverends or preachers, you know?
No, but that doesn't... I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about with Billy, how, like, people, like, white people, like, really, like, don't understand. Not even just white, but just people like that. Like, people like my parents. But I was leaving here, I think it was yesterday, and it's not the worst street, but it's, like, not, like, the... It's, like, a like lower middle-class street. But these little kids were out in front of their house. They don't even have a lawn; it's just all cement. But the mom was like spraying, like a hose at them, and they're just having the best time. And it really, I don't know if it's because I was really stoned or what, but it really stuck with me how
simplicity.
Yeah,
simplicity. You know, that neighborhood and dogfight is a neighborhood that has no opportunity, really. Like I said, I'm surprised the cops were even there.
Yeah.
Usually those cops don't go in there. But when you saw the cops stand there, they knew exactly what was going on, where everybody stood. And that's what I like about those neighborhoods. You know where you stand. In my neighborhood, it's a great neighborhood, but people don't pick up dog shit. So it ain't that fucking great in there, because somebody in the neighborhood got terrible fucking character.
Yeah.
And it's all over the place. So these people have a nice dog, have nice houses, and they just don't pick up their shit. You know why I don't get a dog, Lee?
Why?
Because I'd be damned if I had a bendo with a plastic glove, pick a shit up and talk to somebody as I'm throwing that away with that warm shit in my hand. And not because shit goes right through the fucking baggie. I don't care. In my world, you don't touch shit, okay?
Yeah.
I don't even like wiping my ass and getting a little fucking shit on my finger. I stop what I'm doing and I steam bath my fucking finger, okay? That's how I don't like shit. So that's why I don't get a dog. You people want to know? That's why. I ain't picking up fucking dog shit, okay? There's no way am I bending over with a baggie of that hot, steamy shit. I will puke my fucking breakfast up right there. So let's avoid this right now. The cat litter boxes, they're in fucking cat litter. And it ends up looking like a health bar, like one of those fucking granola bars. And I look the other way, and they shit in the middle of the night. It's not like they shit fresh and it's steamy with those peanuts on top, and I got to pick it up, and it's still stinking. It's not. Me picking up fresh shit with a baggie is not happening in my fucking lifetime. You understand me? I'll come back in an hour when it's nice and cool and it's hardened. Those little shits that freeze up, I'll pick those up and throw them at you. I don't give a fuck. I've done that before.
You just only get when it's warm?
When shit's hard, I'll pick that shit up and put it under your, your door handle. So when you open up the door handle, you get shit on your fingers. I've done that 1,000 times to motherfuckers on my block that think they're fucking cute. But as far as, you know, they
won't, why? What do they do?
You know, they take like they park and they take like 4 feet in front of them and four behind them. Really? You know, take 2 spots. Here you go. Here's a piece of cat shit for you, fresh from the cat little factory. And you see him out in the car, and that one, once you break a piece of listen, shit stinks, but you don't know what stink is till you break that motherfucking half. That's when those inner gases come out of there and shit. Forget about it.
Do you sit there and, like, wait for them? Like,
no, I make believe through the window. I'll set them up. You know what? Once I put cat shit in that door handle, they will never park on that fucking block again.
That's true.
They got to drive home with that shitty hand. Are you fucking kidding me? It's like you with that little Jew finger. That little Pontius Pilate finger you had the other day. Are you kidding me? You got to drive home with that shitty hand, smelling the cat shit, or they got to go into Denny's. But guess what? That cat shit's going to smell the whole fucking way home. So they'll remember who the fuck Uncle Joey is for the rest of their life. Let's give a shout out to some sponsors that wrap this motherfucker up. Not this weekend, but next weekend, I'll be at Wise Guys Live in Utah, Salt Lake City. Don't fuck around, okay? And the week after that, I'll be in Lap, Boston. Oh, shit. First sponsor up, I love you guys with all my heart, and this is the reason why. On it, Alpha Brain, the best ever, you understand? Complete earth-grown nootropics with Alpha GPC and AC11. This shit does not fuck around. If you're a little sluggish, if you're slow, if you're listen, if you're retarded, you're retarded. I can't fucking help you. If you're a fucking dummy, I can't help you. But if you got 2 fucking cylinders cooking, and sometimes you just feel a little hesitant, here you go. Alpha Brain. Money back guarantee. We don't even want the product back. If this shit don't work for you, it ain't going to work for nobody. You understand me? This is their flagship product. So do me a favor. Stop fucking around. Whether it's New Mood, the Shroom Tech, the Hemp Protein, these are the products that I use that have worked for me. Will they work for you? I don't know until you fucking try it. So do me the favor. Just go to Onnit.com. Look at their webpage. Look at all the great supplements they have, whether it's the T-Plus testosterone or the cocoa oil to put in your coffee, the fat. Fucking tremendous. Go to Onnit.com and press in.
Church.
All I can help you with is with the supplements. I can't do nothing for you with the kettlebells, nothing like that. I'm sorry. At this point, I can't do that for you. But as far as supplements are concerned, 10% off Alpha Brain, 10% off any Onnit product, and they also have Stay Onnit where they mail it right to your house at the beginning of every month. How's that for you? Number two, I wore my MeUndies again yesterday, jiu-jitsu. I have the black T-shirt with the underwear combination. Let me tell you something. I don't care how fucking wet my gi is. That MeUndies keeps the moisture in. I'm telling you, my ball sack is dry. My legs are dry. Sometimes behind the sweat from my back goes on the MeUndies underwear on the back. But as far as inside the nutsack, between the creases, everything's fresh. The nutsack holder keeps it all into place. MeUndies has a sensational fucking pair of men and women underwears, whether it's the T-shirts. They have great little fucking shorts. They have great sweatpants that are kind of loose on you, and they have great feel, and they have that same comfortable fit. Don't let me fucking blow your fucking mind. Go to MeUndies.com. Take a look around all the great women's and men's underwear. If you see something you like, go to the box and press in.
Joey.
Boom. There you go. How much off?
20% off your first order.
20% off your first order and free shipping to Canada and the United States. Go to MeUndies.com. You want to be comfortable? You want to feel comfortable underwear? Get those white underwear. Light them on fire. No more skid marks. Get the black ones or the fucking camouflage ones. Chicks will like you. They think you're fucking cool. And that's just how it works out. Go to MeUndies.com and press in.
Joey.
Boom! And get 20% off your first order and free shipping in Canada and the United States, correct?
Correct.
All right. From there, you're going to say, Joey, what about those nature boxes people have been getting? I've been seeing for free online. I still got it for you. Whether you want the garlic plantains, the South Pacific plantains, the chocolate nom-noms, the chocolate cocoa-covered almonds, fucking their snacks are delicious, nutritious. You know, you can eat them. They have a resealable, so you don't have to be a fucking animal. When I open up a bag of Lay's chips, it's a big bag. You know, I don't walk on one leg. What am I going to do, eat 3 chips and put it away for later? Fuck that shit. You eat the whole fucking thing, and there goes your fucking diet for the day. There goes your waistline. There goes your fucking trans fats and all that shit. You don't worry about that stuff with NatureBox.com. You open up the fucking pretzels, the Kung Pao pretzels. You don't like them, you fucking seal them up. You only had 3 of them, you seal them up. That's why I like. They're nutritious, nutritionalist approved. They're fucking delicious. And you know what? They're healthy, all right? 0 trans fats, and they're going to work for you. And the best thing about all, They're free bitches. Okay? Nobody slings dick like that for free if they didn't think they'd have a good product. They're going to send you three big bags, two big bags and three little bags. Go to naturebox.com right now and press in.
Just go to naturebox.com/Joey.
Boom! And get your free fucking starter box. Five bags for free from NatureBox. Shipped to your house. It's going to cost you like $2, but who gives a fuck? I'm giving you $30 value for free. Once again, onit.com, MeUndies, and NatureBox. And a big shout out to Iron Dragon TV. Get two free martial art films right away from 4K technology. What are they pressing the box?
Joey,
and get two free films from IronDragon.com. I'd like to thank all my guests this week, King of Autism, Billy Corbin, my main man, fucking Steve Simone. Don't forget, next week I'm in Salt Lake City, and the week after that, Laugh Boston. Lee, what's up with you, Cocklicker?
I put out a Flying Jew radio with Paula yesterday talking about law school.
Okay.
So I'd appreciate if they go check that out.
And what kind of scholarship she get?
She got there's a whole bunch of groups. She doesn't know which one she got yet, but it's going to be a little bit of money, so she's excited. They only pick like 8 people from each school. It's between 7,500 and 15 grand, so they'll find out.
With a minimum of 7,500.
Yeah.
That's Sushi Dan.
I know. Trust me.
On the fucking arm.
Trust me. I'm ready. I'm ready to retire.
You bad motherfucker. Have a great weekend. Thank you very much for watching, listening, or whatever the fuck you do at the church.
Now that the show is over, don't forget to go to naturebox.com and sign up to get your free sampler box of great-tasting, healthy snacks. Forget the vending machine and start snacking smarter with delicious treats like barbecue kettle kernels. Go to naturebox.com/Joey. That's naturebox.com/Joey. Also, go to MeUndies.com/Joey and check out the pics of the men's and women's underwear they have for you. They have shirts, shorts, socks, everything you want to wear. When you go to MeUndies.com/Joey, you're going to get 20% off of your order. And they're offering free shipping in the United States and Canada. Go to onit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off of all the great optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport. It's code word CHURCH to get 10% off.
Trying to fuck since the 12th grade. It's it's ironic. I had the boo, she had the chronic. The Lakers beat the Supersonic. I felt on the big fat fanny, pulled out the jammy and killed the poo nanny. And my dick runs deep, so deep, so deep, put her ass to sleep. Woke her up around one, she didn't hesitate to call Ice Cube the top gun. Drove her to the pad and I'm coasting. Took another sip of the potion, hit the three-wheel motion. I was glad everything had worked out. Dropped her ass off and then chirped out. Today was like one of those fly dreams. Didn't even see a berry flashing those high beams. No helicopter looking for a murder. Two in the morning got the fat burger. Even saw the lights of the Goodyear blimp and it went Ice Cube's a pimp. Drunk as hell but no throwing up. Halfway home and my pager still blowing up. Today I didn't even have to use my AK. I gotta say it was a good day.